So, Berto, recently I handed the keys over to you so that you could drive this bus that is called Psychology in Seattle.
Into a tree.
Whether you drive it into a tree or down the street, it's up to you. And you did really well. You did not drive us into a tree.
Good.
Or if you did, it was a funny tree. So I thought I'd do it again with an idea that you had, which is you want to present villains from the comic books that you love.
Yeah.
And that we will assess them psychologically. We might even diagnose them.
Yes.
But you know all the data.
Yeah.
And I just can riff.
Yeah.
I don't have to do anything. I haven't prepped at all for this episode, Berto.
That's perfect.
I feel so liberated. So let's get into it. Let's analyze the psychologies of villains that you present with the data you present. What do you say, Berto?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor, and my favorite comic book character when I was a kid was Iron Man, because that was pretty much, I had maybe like 7 comic books that randomly came to me through my brother, and Iron Man just looked so cool.
Oh, he did. Oh, my name is Humberto Castañeda, and I am trying every day to make true level. All right, so here's what we're doing. Bad guys in comics. Now, there's different types of bad guys in comics. There's all sorts of different types. Can you think, what are some of the types, like archetype of bad guys? Like the...
Well, I just think like Batman has all the archetypes, right? You've got the crazy,
one
in the Joker.
Yeah.
And then you've got the manipulative one, like the Riddler.
Yeah.
And then you've got the rich one, like the Penguin.
Yeah.
And then you've got Two-Face,
mm-hmm.
who is good and bad. You don't know which one's going to show up. And then, there's got to be some others in there too.
Right, so that's great. So Batman by itself, and a lot of the, you know, Spider-Man, Superman, a lot of them end up with so many antagonists that you end up really seeing either all or most of the archetypes. I made a list to try to summarize.
Your own taxonomy.
My own taxonomy, if you will. So there is the low-level criminal. These are the ones that you encounter that are more numerous and less important, but you will see them. And
like a mob boss?
Not necessarily the boss, but one of the underlings, like the right-hand person. But then there's the mob boss. You mentioned Penguin. Penguin is a very good example of a mob boss.
Yeah.
The Kingpin in Spider-Man is also a great example of a mob boss. Criminal mastermind is another archetype. Now, the criminal mastermind is like the Lex Luthor, who's a genius, but he's applying his genius always for criminal purposes, right?
He doesn't have any special powers except his intelligence.
He's really smart and definitely a criminal.
Yeah.
There's the humorous nuisance, I called it. That's the Riddler. Mm. Like the Riddler, traditionally, he's not, well, sometimes he's trying to help the Joker or something, but normally he's just kind of doing his own weird little side game. And if anything, he's not necessarily evil, depending on which storyline you look at.
Kind of like Thor and what's his face?
Loki, right? It's like, oh my gosh, why do you have to be so annoying, right? Sometimes they definitely do stuff that's really bad. But then there's the psychopath. This is the out and out, like you mentioned the Joker. The Joker might be one of the, especially that, like if you look at the Dark Knight movie.
The more recent depictions.
Yeah, like he's a psychopath, right? But then you have the psychotic. This is more of like the Scarecrow character, where he's, reality's not a thing. You know, he's divorced from reality and he's having crazy delusions and he's going after the good guys. There's also the force of nature. The force of nature is something like a Galactus who is, I guess he's not really a criminal mastermind. He's just this thing out in space that's devouring worlds, right? And there's the ends justify the means. The ends justify the means is someone who believes
the guy from,
themselves.
From Watchmen, the good guy.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Adrian Veidt, the Ozymandias.
Oh, yeah, Ozymandias. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's funny you mention him. He's coming up in a bit. But yes, it's this kind of like, they believe they're doing right. Thanos,
yeah.
You could think of them that
way. The
way
he's portrayed in the movies.
Yeah. Now, he's also sort of a criminal mastermind in the comics, but whatever. All right, great. So this is all true. Now, origin stories. Can you think of, again, thinking of categories, not necessarily like specific ones, but you can give, can you think of some different kinds of origin stories we find for the bad guys?
Well, if we stick to your taxonomy, if you have your psychotic, someone who is suffering from serious mental illness, then something usually in these stories drives them crazy. Mm-hmm. They're stuck in a coffin for 10 years or something. Yeah. Or they, I don't
That's
know,
a good
they
one.
Have we too should, much trauma. They're in World War II, and right. they see too much death, and it just breaks them or something like that.
Right.
So that's one origin.
Yeah. So in the way I put it was, there's sort of like two in there. One of them is they're normal, quote unquote, until some terrible thing happens. Now, sometimes that terrible thing in your case of being in a coffin for 10 years, okay, but it could also be a moment in time in their story. And then there's a variant, which is they actually had trauma when they were young, as a child or very young. And so some examples, normal, and there's another one we'll get to, but normal until a terrible accident. Do you remember Mr. Freeze from mm-hmm. the Batman? So he was this like really good scientist. He was trying to help humanity. He was trying to help his wife. And then this horrible accident makes him into Mr. Freeze. Mm-hmm. You know, and that makes him kind of go crazy a bit. You know, mm-hmm. he was fine before that. And then he has this horrible accident. Another example is the Lizard from Spider-Man, who was a great scientist trying to do good for the world, trying to combine DNA to like cure disease, and then horrible accident by injecting himself, and then he turns into this horrible monster. Hmm. Another one is the Green Goblin. Now, the Green Goblin is more debatable because it's fair to say that Osborne, whatever his last name is, Harry, was already kind of, you know, a rich, kind of didn't care too much things, but still, he was mostly friends with Peter Parker, and he was trying to do good stuff. And then he injects his own stuff again, and then turns into a really he has a psychotic break, and now he's like really crazy. Okay, and then the trauma as a child examples. Magneto, you mentioned World War II. Magneto was in the Holocaust. He uh-huh. was this Holocaust survivor, and that really like traumatized him into wanting
power.
What?
Power, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because him and his people didn't have power.
That's right.
And were exploited.
That's right. And he felt that as mutants, they would be, the same fate would come to them. And so
right.
And so he wasn't always evil or anything. In fact, he would probably consider himself ends justify the means.
Right.
Right. And then always another trauma as a child example is Bane from Batman. He was stuck in this pit from the moment he was a little kid, and he had to learn to survive in darkness and fight and all these things. So he never had a chance at human closeness and things
like
that.
Is that where he put Batman?
That's where Bane is.
Yeah, but that pit that he put
Oh, yes, that is the pit. Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
What's going on with that pit? Why does that thing exist?
That pit was sort of like to train assassins, I think.
So yeah. If you made it out, you would become one of the assassins?
You know what? I'm actually going to... I don't know. I don't know exactly. I don't know that whole backstory. Mm-hmm. It seemed to me like it was this pit where you would train assassins, but someone in the comments might be like, you're an idiot. It was actually this other great long storyline in these comics that mm-hmm. I haven't read. So I don't know. Another example of trauma as a child that's also terrible accident, but mostly trauma as a child, is the Scarecrow. He was viciously, viciously abused all his childhood. And so he became psychotic and all these crazy things. And on top of that, he experimented with all these chemicals, and then that made everything worse. Then there's a third category that I wanted to do for origin stories, which is the always evil category. An example of these are literally characters like Mephisto and Lucifer, who are by design sort of evil. Mephisto doesn't really have a backstory where he became evil. And Mephisto is a comic book character, not just the reference to the Mephisto in literature. He was always evil. Mm-hmm. Another example, and it could be slightly debated, is Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor doesn't have a actual point in, depending which backstory, there are some where he was fine, he was friends with Clark, and then some. But in most of the original comics, Lex Luthor is just this really criminal mastermind dude who's always just been like that. Mm. Another example is Dormammu, like sort of like also a force of nature. Where
Dormammu
from the Doctor Strange side of things, where he's just this multi-dimensional entity who just wants to come in and create chaos, there's no moment, there's no thing. He's just, that's what he is. He's just evil. Yeah. You could argue Galactus, but Galactus actually has this weird origin story where he used to be good. And then I don't know all the details, but eventually became like a devourer of worlds. Okay. So those are origin story types.
Does Galactus need to eat worlds?
Yeah, he feeds on worlds.
He'll die if he doesn't eat worlds?
I don't know if he dies. He probably goes into dormant state or something.
Something bad happens to him.
Yeah, but he's cleansing the universe of, you know, stuff. Kind of like he's a force of nature, you know. All right, so I wanted to focus on three specific ones because otherwise we could do this forever. We're going to do the Joker, Lex Luthor, and Adrian Vitt, the Ozymandias character. Mm. And I picked three that were of different archetypes.
No MCU.
No MCU. That's true. I didn't actually pick that on purpose, but you're right. All right. So the Joker. The Joker has many different backstories, but all the backstories in general are sort of clouded, and a lot of times he's an unreliable narrator. The perfect example is in The Dark Knight. Do you remember how they keep asking him how he got his scars?
Yeah.
And he always makes up a different story, and so you never know what really happened.
Right.
That's not unusual. That happens in the comics a bit too. There are some stories, like in the new Joker movie, he was abused as a child. You know, he has very deep wounds and things like that.
And his mom had issues. And right. Somehow the Wayne family, problems. I can't remember, somehow the Wayne family had something to do with it, right?
Yes. And there's one very famous storyline called The Killing Joke in the comics. That's probably the best storyline for the Joker, where he was actually a comedian. He was trying to make it. He wasn't a bad person necessarily. And then he fails. He can't make it. He's not a good comedian. And then he has a horrible accident, and then he kind of like goes crazy and stuff. But
in the Joker from the 90s, the TV, the movie,
yeah,
he was a mob guy and fell into a vat of acid.
And then that made him a little, but he was already a bad guy, right? He was just kind of like, gets worse.
He just becomes more, insane. What do you say? Well, more like psychopathic, because it's like, well, I can never have a normal life because of my face being disfigured. So I don't even care about my life. I'm going to bring everything down.
Right. So one thing I wanted to do is, what D&D alignment would you give the Joker?
Chaotic. And evil, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I would too. And when I looked it up, most people, in fact, the funniest thing, I was looking for D&D alignment. And you know how a lot of times some images come up? They had examples from popular fiction. And in like 10 different ones, the Joker, in fact, the Heath Ledger Joker was shown in the chaotic evil square.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
So for people who don't know, Dungeons & Dragons, developed by Gary Gygax in the 60s. He developed this alignment system, meaning and there are two axes, good and evil, and chaos versus law. So the good and evil makes sense, but chaos versus law, if you are a lawful good person, you would be of the government or religion. You'd be of society's norms.
Like Captain America.
Yeah. If you're a chaotic good person, if you're good but you're chaotic, you'd be more like someone like Spider-Man, who doesn't work for the government, kind of plays by his own rules, but is
Peter
definitely
Quill maybe or something.
Definitely for good, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Quill would be a great example.
Yeah.
If you are chaotic evil, then you're like the Joker, where you're evil, clearly, but you also live by your own rules.
You have no allegiance as even to other bad guys.
Yeah. If you're a lawful evil character, you would think of someone like the Penguin or someone who is a part of an organization. Mm-hmm. There's rules that you have to follow that even you follow yourself,
right?
Because you're part of an alliance with other mobs or something like that. So you're evil, but you follow a certain code.
Ooh,
especially
in that latest Batman movie. What was that one called? The one with
The Batman, isn't
it? The Batman, yeah. That Penguin is portrayed very much like what you're describing.
Yeah.
He, in fact, comes off as less evil than a lot of the other people because he's following the organizational rules.
Right.
Yeah.
So you could have a politician that was lawful evil.
Right.
Because they follow the rules, they follow the system, but they also are exploitative of other people's lives, that kind of thing.
Makes sense. Okay, so now, since there's so many different depictions of the Joker, I'm going to ask you to give me your professional and binding evaluation of the Dark Knight's Heath Ledger's Joker portrayal, if
okay.
you recall.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's review the data. So we don't know his backstory because, or we're not clear on his backstory because he could have been telling the truth in part, but he also could have been lying completely. So we have really no idea
right.
as to why he is committing crimes.
Right. There are some hints that he is a trained, he's a trained person in military ways. There's some hints to that.
Oh, really?
But we have no idea if it's because he actually was in the military or if he learned it himself or something. But he clearly is, you know, and then there's definitely, he has an injury in his face. But it could have been self-inflicted, so we don't really know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is, he doesn't have remorse. He doesn't mind killing people, right?
Yeah.
He is extremely obsessed.
Yeah.
With, what is his goal?
Remember, if you recall, he even doesn't mind killing members of his crew, like at all. Like he has zero compunction about it.
Right.
And then you're asking, what is his goal? That's a great question, because he was trying to get the Batman into this impossible situation where he'd have to pick between two Sophie's choice kind of situation, right? Why? And
he had to choose between Harvey Dent
and his wife.
Right.
Yeah.
So why did he want that?
And why did he want that? Remember, Batman punches him senseless trying to understand him. And he never can. And even when he's dangling him, the best he can get out of him is like he just wants to introduce chaos into Batman's perfect little order.
Mm. He wants to introduce chaos.
But it's not that he doesn't say, you don't remember me, do you? I was that little child. And there's no reveal. There's no like, you should have thought better. No.
Well, the only human regular analogy I can think of is a super fan. Like he was a super mm-hmm. fan of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
He knew about Batman up and down,
right.
backwards and forwards.
Clearly, because he knew what he would care about.
Even though Batman had no idea who he was until he started to do all these things.
Right.
So at the beginning of the movie, he's committing crimes because he wants to get on Batman's radar?
Or
he's trying to get money.
And money, but he doesn't seem to have a regard for becoming rich. Like, that's not the thing.
Because if he wanted to become rich, there are easier ways to use his skills.
And he had enough money after the first heist that he's done.
Right.
Yeah. So, if you recall, when he goes to the bad guys, the mobsters, and they're all trying, like, he's not playing by their rules either. They're trying to kind of, like, talk sense.
He's burning a lot of bridges.
Totally.
Yeah. So he wants to get to, so his perfect world is to set the whole thing up, which he does. And he wants to get underneath Batman's skin? He wants to change his personality?
No, he just wants to watch Batman's world burn.
He wants him to suffer?
I guess you could call it suffering. The way it's portrayed, and this is, I think, the genius of it, is that Batman is, like us, trying to get to the why. Like, okay, what the hell are you trying to do? And the Joker's like, no, it's that question that I'm trying to go against. Mm-hmm. You want me to be like this. You want to be the good guy in Gotham City, but I'm just going to destroy all that for you.
Yeah, well, there's of course no disorder in the DSM that causes that.
No.
You could argue there's a bit of OCPD in there, of obsessiveness, because it's if you just look at it from a non-comic book lens, you have an individual who is not out for their own needs. They're ruining their life.
Right.
They're not doing this so that they can retire in the Bahamas mm-hmm. or they could enjoy gambling better or something, or have a nice house, or even have more drugs or more fame, or he's single-mindedly obsessed with messing with someone else's life, Batman. So in that way, if I was to make a hypothesis, I would say that he has something against order. He has some trauma around order. He's transferring something, would be the assumption, that sometime in the Joker's life, early childhood, there was someone who was imposing order over his life in a very harmful, traumatic way. And, you know, like you imagine the trauma, and this is too simplistic, but it's just one thing to think, is like he's 3 years old and he just wants a puppy. And his dad is like, but puppies are chaotic and they poop on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're not going to have that stuff. And maybe one day mom or auntie gives him a puppy, but dad like kills the puppy and says, see, this is what happens. There's chaos right. in the world. And so I'm going to kill, or even puts him in a situation where it's like, you can either choose the cat or the puppy, but I'm killing one of them because that's too much chaos.
Right.
And so he grows up and says, I'm going to show my dad, i.e. I'm going to show Batman, I'm going to show law and order that chaos is actually good. But of course, he shoots himself in the foot because he's still denying his needs.
Yeah.
He nor anyone else gets to walk away with the cat and the puppy.
Right. No, that's a great, great point. Would you say, and of course, I have no idea because you're doing as good a job as any. Is he a psychopath?
Psychopath. Psychopaths are people that lack empathy and have a lot of behavioral evidence thereof, and also personality elements thereof. Is he a psych? Does he lack empathy? It depends, because certainly you could make a case for it.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to care when people are dying right in front of him. Does he kill directly any innocents? And he almost kills all those people on that ferry.
Yeah.
But he could have figured Batman would save him, right?
Well, I mean, okay, so it's been a while since I've watched it, to be fair. However,
does he kill anyone in the bank when they do the heist? Because you could argue the people I'm remembering that he kills.
It's all his associates.
Yeah, he kills
other
mob
guys,
bosses. Well, he blows
rich
up
people.
He blows up the hospital. Who were in the hospital when he
That's
blew
true. He does blow up a hospital.
Who was in the hospital when he blew that up?
I think there were innocent people in that hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so if that's the case, then yes. Unless he is so single-mindedly focused on this mission. You know, you have people who are not psychopaths.
Right.
In all likelihood, there's a chance they are, but it doesn't differentiate between the job, who are manning a, who are working a drone that drops bombs on people who are likely to be the enemy, but maybe not. And certainly there's collateral damage that happens. Those people go home at night, sometimes traumatized, and sometimes they quit. But a lot of times they go home and they sleep well.
Yeah.
Are these people psychopaths? No.
No.
They don't go home and exploit people. They still have empathy. But their job is such, they've been trained as such, or the job gives them the certain data that is in line with, you're actually saving people's lives. You're actually doing a good thing by killing those people.
I would say the Joker, the evidence we
By
have,
the way, I want to say I'm not in support of that.
Yeah,
I'm
of
saying
course.
That soldiers, whether they're drone operators or in World War I and they're jumping out of the trench, are indoctrinated into a life, a world in which the enemy is over there and it's you or them. And if you don't kill them, they will kill all your family. So, you know, you just do that. Not that it doesn't traumatize you. Not that you don't have empathy. There's a lot of examples of people shooting over the enemy's head. But when you kill someone and walk away with it and sleep okay, it doesn't mean that you're a psychopath.
Absolutely. And so as a counterexample, even in that first scene of the bank heist, we see that the Joker absolutely manipulates and uses all the people in all his, say, comrades in the heist, and has definitely negative compunction about killing them. Like, that's just fine.
But it would be, but you'd really have to know what sort of theory or thesis or mission he was on, you know, what sort of indoctrinate, where he's coming from.
Okay, so that, fair enough. And another example, when he finally pits Batman in his Sophie's Choice, he knows one of them at least is going to die. And he's only doing it to teach Batman a lesson about how he can't actually save the day.
Yeah, let me give you a very stark, terrible example, not terrible, but horrific example, which is suicide bombers have existed in suicide. Right. Suicidal killing has happened in our various societies. It would happen in our society in the past, currently happening in various societies. It's hard to know because they're dead after the fact, right. But the thinking is that these individuals are not psychopaths. They're indoctrinated into a thought, into a paradigm, into an ideology that says, well, sure, those individuals in the towers, the World Trade Center, are not directly at fault for what is going wrong in this world, but they're a part of the system and they benefit from it and they deserve to die. And they made their choice. They could have risen up against the evil empire, which is the United States government, and they chose not to. So yeah, not great, but you know, sacrifices have to be made.
Right.
So in the same way, could Joker, if he had an ideology that was along those lines, and if somehow the Joker were taken out of that lifestyle and ideology, would he exhibit general psychopathy and lack of empathy towards other people? We don't know. We don't have that data.
We don't have that data. Okay. Now, obviously, there's very different portrayals in various, you know, obviously, Batman's been around for decades and decades. There are clear examples in some of the storylines in the comic books where he is portrayed as a sadist, as a psychopath, all these things. And I don't mean it like I diagnosed. I just mean like it's almost written in the pages, you know. So, sometimes actually Batman and or someone he consults with will call the Joker a psychopath, right? Like they'll use that terminology.
Sadistic meaning reason he just is taking pleasure in someone else's
suffering. Like he tortures Batman on purpose and loves it and just like enjoys it. So that's been portrayed in some of the comics and things like that. Usually his brain has been chemically damaged. But he never, ever in the Dark Knight is shown to have a human connection. Whereas, except maybe with Batman, but only in this like super dysfunctional way. Whereas in a lot of the other portrayals, like he actually has Harley Quinn, who in that one's really, really sketchy because he abuses her and manipulates her to like falling in love with him in several of the portrayals, right? But he still ends up having a relationship with her. In other times, he has more of a consortium of bad guys that he is more of a part of or something. So it kind of varies, but usually he is not following anyone else's rules. So that part's true. Another example, you mentioned Marvel, that is similar in net effect is the Green Goblin, although the Green Goblin's a little... The Green Goblin is a little more... Actually, no, it's pretty similar. So the Green Goblin and the Joker are pretty similar. The Green Goblin is portrayed as like this insane killer who's got zero empathy and he's just like out to cause chaos. And same as the Joker. So that would be like a close analog between Marvel and DC. All right. Next character
was... Let's take a break before we go to the next character. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems. But there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, Birdo, before going on with this conversation, who's your favorite villain of all time in the comic book universe?
Ooh, a favorite villain. Okay, I'd have to go with Lucifer portrayal in the Sandman series.
Okay. What about your second most favorite?
I see.
Someone that we know about.
Well, let's just do the Joker. I love the Joker.
Okay, so if the Joker were to try to convince the listeners right now to become patrons or to become annual or upper tier patrons if they're already a patron, what would he sound like?
I'm so glad you asked me that question. Here's the thing. You have a simple choice to make. You could become patrons, and it's what I would do. Or I'll show up and I'll make you patrons. Do you know what it's like to make a pencil disappear? Because I can show you and you won't like it. The higher your patronage, the less likely I am to show up. Although I might still show up and thank you in my own way.
Golly, it's kind of frightening. It is a frightening idea of just like, I'm going to threaten you. And I'm so out of control mentally that you can't predict anything about me.
Right.
I don't even give off the vibe that I care about my own life.
Right.
So
that was what was so
horrifying. Did that role play make you warm? And because you had to unzip your jacket.
Yeah, I got a little warm. That was one of the horrifying things about that portrayal, was that it was like, how do you negotiate? You can't. You don't negotiate. There's no negotiation. All right. Moving on, Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor, Superman's arch nemesis. You know, he's portrayed very, very frequently as his number one antagonist. Certainly in the Superman movies, you know, at least the first one and he second one as well and stuff. Lex Luthor's D&D alignment, from what you know.
Well, he's evil. And my main reference are the Christopher Reeves movies. He's evil. Let's see. What was his motivation in the Christopher Reeves movies? He was just greedy. He wanted the Western seaboard as his own. He bought up all the land in Western California, and he wanted to blow up so that it would slide into the sea.
Right, so he'd have a seafront property.
So he could have seafront, and he was going to be rich, and then he'd be able to retire, and he was going to kill millions of people. So yeah, that's evil, obviously. And would he be chaotic? So there's a neutral, which is like neither.
Right.
I would say he's more neutral evil.
Yeah. That's a fair characterization.
Because lawful, he doesn't. It's not like he's part of a organization.
No. Now, I will say this. So there's various, very different portrayals for Lex Luthor.
Yeah, well, was he in the Justice League version? Was Lex Luthor? Because wasn't he like the leader?
Yeah. He was the, because he was portrayed by Jesse, whatever his name is.
Jesse. No, I'm talking about the cartoon in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was in there. The Manta was kind of like the leader.
Oh, really?
But Lex Luthor was one of the main
leaders. People, yeah. So you could say in that portrayal, he was more of a
lawful,
sort of evil. Lawful evil. But in the movies, I would say he's more neutral because he's not particularly chaotic.
This one, I'd say, has varied a lot. So it was really hard to pin down. I like your characterization probably more than what I did, because it's just that there's a version of Lex Luthor that's very common in the comic threads where what drives him is mostly that he's jealous of Superman. Hmm. He's just jealous of Superman and he wants more fame. But there's various storylines where Lex Luthor is publicly a good guy.
So maybe true neutral in that situation.
Yeah. So I was actually going with a neutral in there, but it's very arguable because he's done evil things in many of those.
Yeah. I mean, the Christopher Reeves movies, that's like, evil. That's evil, evil,
that's evil.
That's evil,
yeah. So anyway, but it's debatable, but it's interesting to consider. Okay. Generally, he is portrayed as a narcissist.
Did you watch Smallville at all?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like it?
You know, we were talking about Rory the other day?
Uh-huh.
Hot Rory, as we call him.
Yeah.
Him and I would watch that a lot together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We love Stacy, my wife, knows the guy who played Lex Luthor.
Oh, he was in, right, what's his name? I love that actor.
I can't remember his name.
That actress is the one that was in Nexium, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. They filmed that in Canada, just outside Vancouver.
So the Smallville portrayal of Lex Luthor is sort of unusual because he was portrayed as actually a good guy, friend of Clark's and all these things, who slowly has this transition. I thought it was really good the way they did it. Mm. But usually Lex Luthor is portrayed as a narcissist. And I mean that as in the main thing he cares about is his name. It's like his company is Luthor Corp. You know, like he wants to be famous. Mm. And he wants to be more famous than Superman. Mm. And he's got this thing where he's like, if he's not in the papers, if people are not talking about him, it's a problem. You know.
All right. Well, yeah. So that alone is a hallmark of what we call narcissism.
Right.
Where you are obsessed. And the thing that I think people don't necessarily really grasp when they think about narcissism is that, because I think when people talk about narcissism, they're essentially saying self-centeredness, right? That people are out for themselves and they don't care about other people's feelings. And I think they kind of relate to it. Everyone can relate to that, right?
Right.
Where we do selfish things. But for people who suffer from narcissistic personality, these individuals, when they go to bed at night, they don't feel good about themselves. Mm. Even if they've accomplished a lot.
Right.
Even if they've gotten their name out there. There's a certain amount of famous or a certain amount of rich or whatever.
Yeah.
They go to bed at night, and when things slow down and they're able to just, and there's no distractions, the deep abyss of terribleness creeps in there that they are worthless. Mm. And so they are constantly running on a treadmill and mm-hmm. never getting anywhere.
Right.
And they're trying to get to the promised land, which is, I'm good enough.
Yeah.
And they distract themselves by trying to convince themselves and other people that at the very least they're better than that person. They're richer than that person. They're better looking than that person. They're smarter than that person. They have more, they're a higher job position than that person. You know, they get more mentions on Twitter than that person. Their inauguration day had this many people more than that person. It's just this constant treadmill and it never stops. And so the individual is not happy.
Yeah.
They are very upset at themselves. They hate themselves deep down. So if Lex Luthor is obsessed with being better than Superman, and really you could see a progression there for Lex Luthor, which is like he wants to be better than his classmate and he beats his classmate. And then later on he wants to be the best in the school. Then he becomes the best. And then it's like, oh, I want to become the richest person in town. Okay, I'm the richest person. Yeah. Okay, now I want to be the richest person in this country. Okay, I'm the richest person. Okay, now I want to be the most famous person. Ooh, I want to be famous. Now I'm in the papers. Who's more famous than me? Okay, well, I beat this politician. I beat that actor.
Right.
Okay, who's more? Okay, but Superman, he's the pinnacle.
Right.
How do I get more famous than him? And then things don't work out. Maybe he tries little things like stunts of, I'm going to donate money to Central Park. I'm going to become a reality TV show. That doesn't work. What do I do? What if I kill him? What if I take him out?
Right.
Well, how do I take him out? Well, I've got to get kryptonite. How do you get kryptonite? You got to enter the criminal underworld.
Right.
You know, you've got to come in league with some, you know, bizarro world Superman, you know, kind of a thing or something. you've got to develop some sort of dimensional travel so you can go to Krypton and pick up some kryptonite. And you got to make a deal with the devil. Who cares? I'm single-minded. I don't, you know, so it's not psychopathy that's driving you.
Right.
It's deep, deep, deep insecurity and envy as a solution to it.
Yeah. Okay, great. So I was going to ask you, so, you know, here is, and this is common to almost all the storylines and portrayals. Super successful business person. Like he runs one of the biggest corporations, super successful. Genius IQ.
And he doesn't just sit back and go, look what I'm doing, or Bill Gates and try to develop vaccines for malaria.
Always bigger, more bigger. He's portrayed as having a genius IQ or at least a very high IQ. And he is very determined, very disciplined in his plans and things like that. Now, in the Superman movie, they portrayed him a little comically, which is totally fine. But generally in the comics, he's like out for blood, like Elizabeth Holmes kind of situation. But
and when we get into his mind, he just wants to be what?
He, again, was sitting there as like this public figure who was beloved businessman, even though he was very, very shady. And out of nowhere comes this man from Krypton who now everyone is obsessed over.
Oh, he's already famous.
Yeah.
And then Superman becomes of age.
Yeah. Again,
and starts to outshine him. And instead of saying, "Holy crap, what great news, we have a hero on our side," he becomes envious.
Yeah. Now,
so up until that point, let me ask you this. Had he done any evil things?
Things, again, billion different versions. But yes, in general, he's an unscrupulous, shady individual who has risen to power and fame and has a public figure who often is positive.
So he's not like a mob boss it's sort of known that he's a cutthroat.
Right.
On the surface, he's trying to come across like he's wonderful and that he is altruistic, gives to charities.
I don't know about that, but at the very least, that his company, because he's just like such a genius businessman.
And he wants to be
so
liked.
Yeah.
And he hides his undermining envy.
Yeah.
He's not out in the open about that. He's still trying to preserve. He doesn't just want to be better than Superman or get rid of Superman. He wants to be loved.
Right. They don't want people to think of him as like a pariah that they hate.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Joker doesn't care.
And he has relationships, at least in many of the portrayals. Even in the Superman movie, if you recall, he does have relationships.
Yeah. Miss Hossmeyer. What was her name?
Mrs. Right.
Bruckmeyer.
Now, from all of this, and you already kind of spilled the beans, but would you categorize him as a psychopath? It sounds like...
Well, you're describing a lot of different depictions.
Yeah.
If I thought about the Christopher Reeve movies... Yeah, because narcissistic personality individuals couldn't kill anyone, really, let alone millions of people in Western California, and just like say, well, that's just the way it's got to be if I'm going to make a lot of money. So in the movies, yes.
But he's not, he's not self-sabotaging. He is a very organized and successful individual. And, he's
but
not
it'd be a strong hypothesis, conceptualization. There's different manifestations of psychopathy. You have the very typical presentation of someone who's in and out of prison. As soon as they get out, they're in their head. They're like, okay, I'm not going to go back to prison. I'm not going to go back to prison. They go to a bar. They get drunk. Someone looks at them funny. And they're like, what are you looking at? And they just punch him and they get in this big fight.
It's the Joe Pesci.
They're right back. Not Joe Pesci, because the Joe Pesci that's in and out of prison. what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
The Joe Pesci that is psychopathic to his friends and no one wants to hang out with him. The very typical...
I was thinking of Goodfellas where he's like...
Right.
Yeah.
but even that, like, that sort of thing isn't really a typical psychopath. Typical psychopaths are, they're loners because no one wants to be around them.
Right.
They exploit everyone. They creep everyone out. They're in and out of... Anyway, so that's one presentation. But there are other presentations. Your boss comes to you and it's just like... So let's say, Berto, you...
Yes.
In your leveling job, your coworker, you're at the same, you've been working with a coworker and they're at your level and both of you are vying for your boss's job and your boss is going to retire soon and your boss has to choose between you and your coworker and you're kind of neck and neck. You could go either way. And one day you walk into your boss's office and your boss says, "Oh my God, you're not going to believe what your coworker did." The other person vying for your job. She did this horrible thing. She completely dropped the ball on the TPS report. I mean, she didn't even turn in.
Right.
She did not come in on Saturday. Okay. You know that the boss actually told her to not make a TPS report, but the boss has forgotten.
Okay.
And if you're a psychopath, you're thinking, well, this is a no-brainer.
Right.
I don't even have to lie.
Right.
I can just go,
oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Sucks.
I just have to not.
Yeah.
Say what I know to be
That's
true.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything wrong, and no one will find out.
Right.
Because no one knows you know.
Right.
I guess. You're the only one that knows, and you can either press the button that saves your coworker and you're still neck and neck and might even make you more of a viable candidate because you came, but might not. Or you can absolutely slam dunk win the race right here and now, no consequences, no possibility.
Right.
If you're not a psychopath, you would have that would be a conundrum.
Right.
Not that you wouldn't think about
Whereas, like for me, I would say, oh, yeah. In fact, I overheard her talking about her.
If you're a psychopath, there's really no question.
Right.
You don't.
Why would you not? Like, that's
It'd be stupid.
You probably don't view it as a as a question, right?
No.
Like, yeah, you're just like, oh, great. It's more like, oh, great, this just solved my problem.
Yeah, like when you find a $20 bill.
Oh, nice, I found a $20 bill.
You don't think like, and there's really no way to find right. the, it's in the middle of nowhere.
It's not like you just saw it drop from someone's.
Yeah, there's no way they're going to connect.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, I found $20.
You don't think, oh, what about the person that lost this money?
Whereas the psychopath actually sees the $20 bill fall and says, great, I found $20.
Exactly. So for Lex Luthor, which one was he,
right,
given
right.
the different depiction? Was yeah. he the sort of person that's like, well, yeah, I just don't, I don't really, I don't care about other human beings. I'm in it for myself.
I think
or
so.
Was he massively distracted by his envy that he over, that eclipsed his
empathy? No, he doesn't
empathy.
Care about human beings in most of the storylines. Now, there is a storyline where he becomes president of the United States. Of the United States.
Speaking of, now in the Smallville, he's not a psychopath, right?
No, he doesn't portray that way. No.
He's very compassionate. Yeah. He's
they're
connected.
Friends. They have. He has. Yeah. They're a circle of friends.
He's altruistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this storyline in the comics, where he becomes the president, he is definitely not meaning well. He's like obviously, and Superman is so upset that he becomes president that he flies off into space. And in a fit of rage, destroys one of Saturn's moons.
Which
now
one?
Think about that. I don't know, but think about that. Superman, basically, because if you destroy a Saturn moon, that probably is going to doom the solar system. Honestly, like who knows what the side effects of that? I mean,
no,
it could cause all sorts of destabilization in the orbits of things, right?
No,
I mean,
We'd have to ask Neil deGrasse Tyson, but I know enough about it. You know enough about astrophysics to know that if one moon around Saturn, even the biggest moon, Titan, were to be obliterated, the debris would, most of it would just fall into Saturn.
No, but it's not just the debris. It's like the gravitational equation now changes dramatically around Saturn.
The moon is the tiniest percentage of the mass of Saturn. If you take into account all the mass of the Saturn system, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if the moons comprise 0.001% of the mass of that whole system.
But in a billion years? Okay, fine. Whatever. The point is that I found it very destructive and kind of psychopathic of Superman to do that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay.
So I mean, it is kind of interesting. It sounds shocking. Like, wait, you just destroyed one of the moons?
Yeah.
Now, there are some very small, insignificant... I think Saturn has like 48 moons
maybe
or something.
Maybe he picked one of the little.
But at the same time, it's like, well, it doesn't really matter.
I mean, if he destroyed our moon, we'd be pretty
our
screwed.
Moon. Our moon, yeah.
All right. So, yeah. So, in the end, I like your characterization. He's certainly self-involved, but he probably is also a psychopath. He generally, one of the storylines, in fact, sort of what they were getting at with Smallville, but even more so, there's these depictions where he was a teen scientist, very, very, very smart, and then Superboy, trying to save him from an experiment, destroys the lab in the process. Like, well, the lab is destroyed, but Superman saves him.
Is that how he loses his hair?
Maybe in this story, I don't remember. But he really ends up hating Superboy because he thought he was on the brink of like this great discovery. And so even though Superboy saved his life, he doesn't view it that way. He's like, you ruined my chance to make this big discovery. Again, that's just one of the many versions. But so even in that one, even as a kid, sort of, he ends up being like, it's all his fault. And that's why I'm not great. You know, whereas in the more common, like I said, he's already like this big businessman, and then Superman shows up in the world and displaces his attention, and he's like, "What? That was the biggest deal. What are you doing? You know, I hate you."
Interesting.
All right,
Take a break. When we get back, let's do your Asmodeus. What do you say?
Let's do it.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a new year, so of course it's time for New Year's resolutions. But often, those are just manifestations of internalized harmful voices, voices that tell us we're not good enough. So instead of making a resolution to change something, let's recognize that we are already good enough. Now, most people think of therapy as a place for us to work on our problems, But there are several schools of thought within the field of psychotherapy that adamantly reject that paradigm, like narrative therapy and solution-focused. Instead, these clinicians help us focus on what we're already doing well. And by helping us do that, data shows that we often will gravitate towards more beneficial patterns. Well, one place you can find such therapists is on BetterHelp. If you're thinking of starting therapy, it's definitely worth giving a try. So, celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/Kirk today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/Kirk.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back from the break. Let's do an OPP, Birdo.
OPP.
These people became a patron all the way back in July of 2020 and have stayed patrons ever since. We have...
Wow.
Lily from Bloomington, Minnesota, I believe. Valerie from God knows where. Vidar from God knows where. Kaylee from Denver, Pennsylvania.
What? Come on now.
Yeah. Upper tier patron, Kaylee. Int from Beek, Netherlands, I believe.
Ooh, nice.
Victoria from God knows where. Anna from Coolidge, Arizona. Christiana from Franklin, Pennsylvania. Okay. Morgan from Phoenix. Benzie from upper tier patron Benzie from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Oh.
Angela from Montgomery, Texas. Raphael from Indiana. Nomia from Livermore, California. Jesse from God knows where. Sarah from the Philippines. Oh, Manila. Alex from God knows where. Anne from Las Vegas. Alyssa from New South Wales, Australia. Philip from God knows where. Sylvia from Pinebrook, New Jersey. And Alex from God knows where. Thank you for becoming a patron and staying a patron through thick and thin.
Such a variety of locations. I love it.
Birdo, what do you got?
All right. So yeah, so Watchmen, one of my favorite comic books, so good. And I actually really enjoyed the movie. I know that that was a divisive movie. Did you like Watchmen?
Oh, yeah. Loved it.
Yeah, I loved that movie.
Yeah, and the TV show, by the way.
I've never seen the TV show.
Okay, when watch you it. Watch it, mm-hmm. you got to give it some time.
Okay.
Because it's kind of a grower.
Okay.
And you might want to watch some YouTube breakdowns of each episode that doesn't spoil it because or you might know enough about the storyline that will help because I had to kind of watch some stuff but I thought that the TV show in some ways the way they deal with Dr. Manhattan it's just brilliant.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it. It's been on my queue forever.
Yeah,
but I did really enjoy the movie. I thought they did really good justice to the comic. They changed a couple things, but overall, I was like, man, if you were going to do it, this is the way you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And in that story, which is one of the great things about it, you don't have these sort of like stereotypical characters.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's your good guy. Here's your bad guy.
Well, the movie and the comic book are similar?
Very much.
Okay.
And there's so much grayness. Like, well, is this guy like... Is Rorschach good? I mean, he's a misanthrope and like really very dysfunctional in a way, but he's trying to do good. But oh my gosh, what everyone is so gray. Like there's just all shades of gray.
And they're gray because they have to deal with the real world.
With the real world.
Which has Nixon in it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like we're an elected official. Yeah. Nixon didn't take power by taking over the world. He was voted into office repeatedly. So
Dr. Manhattan is helping in Vietnam.
Yeah. You're the American way.
Yeah.
But you're also killing a bunch of innocent people who didn't want to be invaded by a foreign power.
Right. So if you haven't seen it or read it, I recommend it. It is subtle. It is very, very good. But so the main antagonist in the series, in the comic book, is this guy, Adrian Viet. I don't know exactly how to say his last name. It's like Viet or Viet or something. It's V-I-E-D-T or something. Okay. This guy is also known by the name Ozymandias, who is an Egyptian god. And Ramses II, I guess, is the and he is known to the world as this genius super athlete, millionaire, you know, billionaire, whatever, super successful business person. So he's known to the world as like one of the best humans on planet Earth. He just, and he's always charitable and he's always helping people. He's a superhero on top of everything.
How did he get his powers? Was he just born?
He just trained so hard. He trained in the, he went, he took this trip where he trained with masters in Tibet, I think, and he learned a lot
of
martial arts.
So he was born with a lot of privilege and a lot of intelligence?
Yeah, he was born into a super, super wealthy family. Both of his parents died when he was very young, well, when he was a teen. And he inherited this vast wealth, which he immediately gave all away because he wanted to become his own person from scratch. And traveled the world in this big trip where he discovered history and he became obsessed with Ramses II. And he went and he studied and he did a lot of drugs. He did a lot of hallucinogenics. And he had a vision where he walked, I think he walked with Ozymandias, and he was in Babylon and all these things. And he had all these visions of what he was meant to become. Okay. And then he became, because he was so smart, he trained his body. He was like an Olympic class athlete. He became a superhero where he'd beat up people real easily because he was so good.
Not a superhero, but a someone who tried to help people?
No, he actually became one of the heroes in the in that city.
Okay. But not and a super in that he didn't have
superpowers. He didn't have superpowers, no. Well, you could say he was at the peak of human ability, right? Yeah. And then on top of it, because he was so smart, he became this amazing businessman who did all these crazy investments and amassed this incalculable wealth. And then...
he was driven because why?
Well... I don't know, right? Like his.
Because the way to think about this in terms of, and now this is what I think. Mm-hmm. I think that, generally speaking, humans have certain needs.
Yeah.
We have a need for self-esteem. We have a need for closeness and attachment. We have a need for food and water and safety. We have a need for meaning and purpose. We have a need for entertainment and fun. And some of us might have a little bit more need in some area than others, right? But generally speaking, we're the same. Even psychopaths have a need for attachment. That's why Ted Bundy had a really important girlfriend who tragically broke up with him, and then he went off the deep end and started killing people. It wasn't her fault, but he really wanted to connect. And anyway, Adolf Hitler had, what's her name?
Right, yeah.
Oh, what was her name? And so...
by the way, Adrian in the comic is portrayed as not having any close relationships.
Right. So that's what I'm not hearing. I'm not hearing like any kind of balance in his life. And you got to figure if he's a regular human being in terms of my model of thinking about humans. He is sabotaging himself. He's probably having emerging notions of wanting to be close, but something is driving him beyond that. And denying himself that need, you know?
Okay, so a couple more data points.
So what kind, you know, with Lex Luthor, it's this narcissistic need that was developed during the life of like, I have no self-esteem, my solution is to be better than everyone.
Right.
And if you're Asmodeus, it's like, I want to be close to people, but I either don't believe I can be because there's something wrong with me or other people or something, or I'm so driven towards some other problem that I'm running away from, I don't have time for that need, you know.
Right.
What I mean?
So let me give you a couple more data points. When he was a kid, he was very, very intelligent, but he hid his intelligence from everyone by purposely getting like doing bad, poorly on tests. Like he would answer incorrectly, knowing full well what the correct answers were.
Because
he purposely hid his intelligence.
Was he bullied?
Not in the story.
Was he put down because were people telling him, look, you can't be a show off all the time?
Not in the story. Now, what we don't know is we don't see the relationship with his parents, but we do know they both die when he's 17.
But we don't know why they died.
There was some sort of accident. Yeah, there was an accident. They died. I don't remember exactly. But but so there was something about him, even as a child, where he didn't want the world to know that he was special.
Or he just felt bad for other kids.
Could be. Could be. And to that point, he, when he goes and he goes on this trip and he does the drugs and stuff, he envisions himself as, the reason he calls himself Ozymandias is he envisions himself as essentially an Egypt, the second coming of an Egyptian god. And he wants to save humanity. He has come to realize that humanity is doomed. Because they're all fighting and they're going to annihilate each other with a nuclear holocaust. And so he has to save humanity.
Yeah.
And the only way he sees to do that is by having them unite against a common enemy.
Yeah.
And the only way he sees to do that is by doing something so horrific that they think, oh my gosh, look at this alien threat has killed so many of us. We need to unite against this alien threat. So that's how he justifies everything that unfolds, which is if you don't know, spoiler alert, but he has this gigantic creature manifest in New York and kill, you know, millions or whatever. Like a lot of people die in this thing.
Like he manages to transport an alien monster.
Well, he invents it. He creates it and then has it show up, and this monster has psychic abilities, which then immediately lets everyone know that this is an alien creature that means the world harm, so that humans will go, oh my gosh, forget our petty differences. We must unite.
Right. And this is written in the 80s when you had the Cold War,
right,
and you had USSR and the United States,
right,
pointing thousands of missiles at each other, threatening to,
right,
blow up the entire world. There's a very real concern.
So first of all, what's his D&D alignment?
Well, he thinks he's doing good. So he's not lawful good. I mean, so according to this story, Berto, he's not in it for himself.
Right.
Because if he were in it for himself...
Well, let's say from his perspective, it's kind of a weird thing, right? He's like, well, I'm the second coming of Ramses, you know, so I'm a god. But I mean, I'm not doing that for me. I'm doing that to save the world.
Yeah, I mean, so when I am daydreaming, I would say 3% of the time, I daydream in this genre where I have some superpower.
Right.
And by daydream, usually it's when I'm about to fall asleep. It's a way for me to just make my mind blank. I remember years ago, I would have this exercise that I would think I won $1 million in the lottery, and then I would just start spending it.
Like, what would you do with it?
Yeah, I'd go, okay, well, I'd pay off my student loans with X amount. Okay, how much that would that leave me? And usually by, like, spending $75,000, I'd be asleep. Because there's something about the ridiculousness and the relaxation. There's not a problem I'm solving.
Right.
You know? And I'd never spend the whole amount. And
that's
so,
a good technique.
another version of this is I have the ability to stop time, and I don't grow old, so I can do whatever I want. And at first, I'm like a kid in a candy store, and I'm like, ooh, I will. I don't know. Well, if the world stopped, it really kind of. I would watch all of Breaking Bad something, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd have the
you
time.
Finish video games.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on pause and then.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd drive a Lamborghini for a day and then, well, I guess that was fun, I guess. I'd never done that before. Then at some point, though, I would start to try to fix all the world's problems. And usually, again, I fall asleep within a couple minutes because it's such a ridiculous exercise. But a common thing that I would land on was, well, first off, I'd have to have a bunch of money because if I'm working, then that will distract me from actually using my powers for good. So I need to be able to pay my bills and have everything okay. So I figure out a way to break into a bank or, you know, do something with crypto or I don't know. Then I'm like, well, it's kind of shitty if I'm super rich and my close family members are still working. So I'll get some extra money and I'll give that money out. Then what I'll do is I'll set out to end violence, because that's the first problem.
Right.
Humans killing humans. Because there are people literally in the process of being killed.
As you've paused the time.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I walk the earth.
Like Cain.
Yeah. And I just get every gun and every bullet and every missile and every tank and every bazooka and grenade and landmine and torpedo. And I just slowly but surely dump it all in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And it takes me potentially a million years.
Right.
But I fall asleep. So like Asmodeus, I'm envisioning I have a special power that no one else has. If you're Asmodeus, whether it's true or not, he had reason to believe that he had some special power of intellect, that he could connect all the dots, see 20 moves ahead on the chessboard
right.
of politics.
Which
and
he
see
apparently
like,
could.
And so you could see him early on going, okay, what if I ran for president?
Right.
Well, but I wouldn't have any power over the people and their voting, and I wouldn't have any power over USSR and their people. And there, there's always going to be political strife. I could be the smartest president in the world, but I'm still kind of not, I won't have the power to actually save people's lives. We are headed toward the brink of human annihilation.
Right.
How do I stop it now? And I've made the calculations. I've done all the things. Do I insert myself? Do I elevate someone else? Do I take someone down? The only answer I can figure out, and I've made all the there's some error bars in there, but yeah. I'm pretty sure that best case scenario is I kill everyone in New York City. That's 10 million people or whatever it was back then. That is a small sacrifice for eternal peace. And this is addressed in the TV show, actually, because Asmodeus is still around.
It's Ozymandias, by the
way. Ozymandias, yeah. Sorry. Who's Asmodeus?
That's a devil. That's a demon, sorry.
Oh,
that's
from Dungeons and Dragons, yeah. Actually, yeah. I mean, it's from I think, Catholicism mythology, but...
he's like one of the demons in hell.
Ozymandias.
Ozymandias,
okay.
Yes.
So he's in...
In the TV show.
In the TV show, right? And that whole kind of mission is still being addressed.
Right, well, because at the end of the comic book... He's won. Like, he won, basically. Like, the thing went off, and everyone actually did unite. And the only thing left is that Rorschach's writings are there, or something like that. So, it is interesting. That's a comic book where the, quote, bad guy wins. So then it forces you to ask, wait, was he right? Do the ends justify the means? When the aliens show up to our planet and say, give us one baby that we will murder and we will spare your planet. Do we hand them a baby, right? Like, and there is that side that needs to say, no, you, the terrorist, are free, because it's a free universe, to do whatever horrific things you'll do, and we will try to stop you, but we won't become complicit. And so—
But that's a different question. It's similar, but it's different, because if you understand the system and how it works— The politicians of America, the politicians of the USSR, they don't rise to power because they want to annihilate human race. They're trying to rise to power because they want to do good. They're trying to do good by their people, by their neighbors. And you add up the system and the circumstances of the political system, that the capitalist system, the communistic system, the multinational system, the historical system, you add the system of resources that are limited on the planet. You add all that up and... You add in the factors of everyone trying to put all their hard work into doing well by the entire human race, and you get the Cold War. That's what you get. So you have to potentially, if you can see the Matrix, you're Neo, kind of, then there might be answers that supersede our normal way of thinking about morality. The classic example is there's a train heading towards five people, and you can flip the switch so it runs over, it goes down a different track, but it's definitely going to kill one person. What do you do? It's a complicated question, complicated answer, depending on the circumstances, upon when you're asked it, it'll change the bell curve. But,
You have to switch it over to minimize the damage, and at the same time, try to actually stop the train and do everything else in your power. And if you fail, that's okay. You tried your best.
So what do you do?
Yeah, you switch it over to the minimal damage,
yeah,
and you try to stop the train.
But most people...
But you didn't set the train in motion.
Right. So if you are Ozymandias, do you pull that lever and kill 10 million people in New York City to save literally, you know, 4 billion people? Because that's the population of the planet in the 80s, I think.
Right.
Then that's what you do, of course. Right.
But you don't, because in the end, he is one more human with delusions of grandeur that took lives upon himself in the idea that he was going to do good.
So you, who pulls the lever, has delusions of grandeur.
No, I was put in a room, not through my own volition.
Right. He didn't choose to be born into a global system.
If we want to say that, like, ultimately we shouldn't be so angry at him, that's one thing. But what I'm trying to say is that he decided, based on his own, you know, mind about how the world works, that he was going to be fine with killing millions of people, because in his calculations, he averted maybe a billion deaths. Right?
Even if I was in New York City in this fictional world, I would rather have Ozymandias do what he did than not.
But see, this is the catch. He is wrong. He doesn't have a machine that predicts the future.
He thought he had a machine that predicts the future?
No, he just thinks he knows everything.
So what happens in the future?
Well, for example, he didn't predict that the account of what actually happened would survive. He thought, like, if there is one moral to the story, is that at the end, his perfect little plan didn't go off without a hitch, because the truth lived on.
Who told
Rorschach's writings end up getting leaked into out there. And so, but then you realize, well, it's not going to be a quick fix, because this is going to become one of those things that needs to grow into a movement and blah, 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 right? And so, but I would go even further. So let's say it was really a god who actually did know the future. And you look, in 10 years, these people are going to kill a billion people with these nukes. If I kill 10 million of them now, I'll avert those billion deaths, right?
And you know it with 100% certainty.
Because you have a predictable universe, right? Then if you're outside of that universe, then I would still blame you. Because I'm like, well, no, I mean, if you have that kind of power, you need to try to avert the other catastrophe, not kill 10 million people. And the god would be like, you know, I know, I did the math. I'm going to do it by killing. I'm like, no, you're outside of the system. You're this god. Try to do better. Well, what if I fail? You're not the terrorist. You're the one trying to do good by the universe. And that's it. It's like, give me money or I'll kill these people. If you don't give me the money, the blood's on you. It's like, no, you're the one doing the killing. We're going to try our best to stop you. We'll negotiate as far as we can to try to, like, avert the thing. But we're not the bad guys here. You're the bad guy.
So when Doctor Strange sees the millions of possible dimensional forks in the road during the MCU movies, and he sees one outcome that can save everyone, but Iron Man has to die, and he essentially pushes everyone in that direction.
Yeah, that's the flipping of the switch for the train tracks. But he didn't orchestrate a made-up storyline in his head about how, well, if I have Thanos steal all the things, I will avert a... Like, he doesn't do any of that, right? He just says, shoot. We've all been put in this situation by a terrorist, and now I got to act quickly. What's the minimal damage I can do? And it's this. This is me flipping that switch.
That's what Ozymandias did.
No, he created the train tracks and put the train on.
He created the Cold War.
Well, I mean, what I mean is that the train that was gonna kill those people, right? He in his head made those train tracks.
The giant.
He doesn't know for a fact that nukes will kill everyone. He doesn't know that.
I mean, if we look at actual history, I'm glad Ozymandias did not do what he did, because the Cold War came to an end at the, you know, a few years after Watchmen was published.
Right. But look, otherwise you could justify, like, a Hitler or whoever, right? Because, like, well, I don't know. Maybe they were right. Maybe if they had done their thing and 100 years later, things are better. You can't.
No, yeah, exactly.
We
We can't predict the future, and we're not Ozymandias. Ozymandias is a genius, so we can't.
But
know.
He wasn't. You know, he was, but he wasn't smart enough to prevent his own plan from not being flawed.
Yeah, but was it reasonable to believe what he thought to be true? This was all spurred by your question. What alignment do I put him at? And according to me, because he shows no general desire to exploit other humans, right?
Right.
Whereas Lex Luthor had been shady throughout his adult life in business.
Yeah.
The Joker would just randomly be sadistic and torture people for no reason. Ozymandias was, he believed in his ideology, and he had reasons to believe it. He had reasons to believe that no one else would be able to figure out this problem and the solution.
Mm-hmm.
It did end up working. He did play it right, at least in the temporary. And he was sad about killing people, right?
I think he saw... He definitely had emotion to some extent, but he was very detached in the end about it. He was like... Yeah, he was very detached.
Okay.
Because he saw himself as above people. He saw himself as a god.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if he was genuine... Now, the other factor here is drugs, hallucinogens, can cause issues in your personality that are permanent.
Yeah.
Not often, but they can. Literal damage to your brain, injury to your brain that can result in disordered thinking, like you're a god. But is it implied in the comic books that he actually is legit potentially the smartest person that ever lived?
Well, he's definitely implied and shown that he outthinks even Dr. Manhattan briefly. Like he tricks Dr. Manhattan, you know? So he definitely is a chess player to the nth degree.
And along those lines, at least in the movie, Dr. Manhattan, who is a real good guy, but a literal god, not a literal god, but godlike.
Certainly supernaturally.
He has godlike powers.
Yeah.
And talks about how he can see the future and the past all at once. He sees people being born and dying and wars, civilizations growing and drifting away into the sea. So he becomes a little detached. And yet he still loves people, and he is not a psychopath, clearly, Dr. Manhattan. And when he learns about what Ozymandias did, he's like, yeah, I mean, now that it's done...
You're right.
He's right.
He aligns with him, yes.
Yeah. Now, we don't know what Dr. Manhattan would have done if Ozymandias went to him and said, I'm about to do this. What do you think? He probably would have stopped him.
He tried to stop him.
Yeah.
But Ozymandias temporarily outsmarted him. But then Dr. Manhattan can't really be killed. So he comes back. And then you think, okay, now he's going to stop him. But he doesn't, because he's like, yeah, actually, I don't find a flaw in your logic, right?
Yeah.
So you think, oh, well, maybe he was right. But Rorschach, who is not smart and who is not a genius, and I mean, he's smart, but he's not.
Well, he's like you. He's like the arguments you're making, which is like, but it's still wrong, God damn it. And we have to have we can't give up our humanity.
Because, and here's, I guess, one way to think about it. What are we doing this whole thing for? There's no end, this isn't a season, right? Like, we're not, let's see what happens in the next season. We are just here. So which philosophy do you go with? Do you go with the philosophy
where depends on what you privilege.
We're going to try to do the best thing we can and go out knowing that we never deviated from really trying to be good to one another and the universe? Or are we going to play these little games and compromise all that?
Let me break this down into how I see this dilemma, which is interesting. And for the record, alignment-wise, the way I see Ozymandias, and it's really through your eyes because I only know the Watchmen. I've seen Watchmen 3 or 4 times. Yeah. You know the comic books. But I would say he's not evil in my model.
Right.
He's potentially good. He's potentially neutral. But really, it's got to be good, because if he were neutral, he would just ride off into the sunset being a genius.
But he's not lawful.
He's not lawful. But he's not, so I'd say neutral good.
That is a fair characterization.
Is that what other people say?
I didn't look it up, but I came up with neutral as well, because I felt
just neutral, true neutral.
I did neutral.
Yeah,
because I was like, but you're right about the good part, because it matters what he thinks he's doing. It's just that yes.
If at the end of the day, he's like, ha ha ha.
No, he's not.
I'm so smart.
He's not.
Or if at the end of the day he's like, fuck yeah, I saved billions of people.
He's not even that. He's just like, I do what I must. Which is why I kind of go with the neutral part. Because he's like, look, I'm just doing what has to be done.
Yeah.
And I...
So let me break it down to an analogy. You, Birdo.
Yeah.
You live in a house right now with your family. I'm talking about reality.
Yep.
You have a neighbor. Choose which... The neighbor, if you're facing your house to your right.
Yep.
They are contributing to the global warming in a really significant way. They have those cans. Was it PV? What are the
aerosols?
Yeah, the aerosols.
Yeah, they're destroying the ozone.
Yeah,
they just like all day long.
They have a gas furnace with a gas leak outside the house. It's not causing a fire hazard, but it's you can just hear the gas. You can smell the gas, and they're not doing anything about it. In this world, you can't call the utility. They're one of those rolling coal people I told you about.
Yeah, the trucks.
Giant trucks that are purposely, getting 3 miles to the gallon and spitting out all sorts of soot and particulates. They purposely eat beef that is ravaging the Amazon. They vote for anti-environment, all that stuff. Okay. They pollute a creek nearby. Not on purpose, but just by circumstance or whatever. And you're watching this and you're like, look, that's got to stop. So you go over there and it's on your mind. You try to talk to them and they don't hate you, but they're like, yeah, you know, it doesn't really matter. We're all going down. What's one person's actions? They're like, yeah, you know, you're right, but I'd rather do what I'm going to do because it's just more convenient. And really, what's one person's actions going to do? You go home. You're staring into the darkness while you're trying to fall asleep. You're like, God damn. And you can just hear their truck. You know, sometimes they just run their truck at night for no reason. You know, they're rich enough that they can just waste gasoline. Okay. You go back over there. Hey, you can't do that.
Right.
Okay. But Birdo, you know someone with the city. You know someone in the government who is powerful. It's like the deputy mayor or someone, or the utilities vice president, you know, an old friend that goes way back. You know, if you press that button, you can get their whole situation shut down. Permits pulled.
They might
fines,
even spend some jail time.
Citation. Maybe light jail time a week if they don't comply with the initial directives. But you have this special power to be able to bring the hammer down on them that would not happen normally.
Right.
And it's not exactly fair because you would have to pull a favor. That person would have to, your best friend, would have to pull all these employees, you know, 100 different government workers away from other things that they're doing so that they could get this person that is just like next door, just ruining the environment. They're not ruining your life directly, but
they're ruining part of the environment. Yes.
Okay. So everyone with the right mind would say, you should do that, right?
No, of course not.
Why?
Because what I would do is I would try to like complain to the city and actually try to...
Doesn't work.
Right. But that, again, I can't control the universe, but I can go down with a fight.
Okay, so what do you do?
I try to...
You don't ask your best friend to pull all those resources.
If that is not a thing that's supposed to be... Look, I grew up in a culture in Colombia that was all about that. Who do you know? Because, and the people you know, if you know the right people,
right.
I
think this is where it comes from, bro. I think this is, it's a matter of the thing you're privileging is, I think, for lack of a better term, in a good way, order. You're privileging order.
Right.
There has to be order. When we give up order in this way and we go to my best friend and pull that string, we open a door of corruption and chaos that will down the road result in an overall culture that you experienced in Colombia when you were a teenager, which was complete chaos and uncertainty.
That's a great way to put it, because guess what? The next billionaire is going to be like, that actually, I don't know if that was on purpose, but that's interesting. I'm going to create all this other chaos, but for a good reason too. Yeah. And then the world just be billionaires creating massive alien chaos because they are saving the world. No.
Right, like the next billionaire comes, or, you know, a smart-ish person figures out, oh, well, that worked. Like, so I'll create, I want to sell Coke as, I'm the president of Coke. And so I'll have a giant alien smash the Pepsi manufacturing plant. And there'll be this big sign on it that kind of looks like enjoy Coke on the side.
Right.
And
Coke is better. So, I mean, we're helping people.
Yeah. Science shows people prefer Coke over Pepsi.
Look, imagine if there was a company that like, what it does is it lets people express themselves online. And imagine that a billionaire came in and said, you know what? I think this is heading down the wrong way and it's hurting people, but I know how to fix it. So I'm going to take over this company and save the world by helping people express themselves the right way.
Well, so hubris and arrogance is obvious on its face.
Right.
But we live in a world where there is no such thing as an Ozymandias.
But it is only a matter of degrees, right? Like these people think that they know better.
Right.
He thought he knew better.
And Dr. Manhattan agreed, and Dr. Manhattan knows almost everything.
Dr. Manhattan killed people in Vietnam.
But he learned from his mistakes.
Did he?
Didn't he?
He is a victim of an experiment gone wrong, who now believes that because they can see multiple times at the same time, they are detached from humanity. And they don't feel an attachment to humanity.
So let's say that there's a debate between Ozymandias and Rorschach. And it comes down to, you know, Ozymandias is saying to Rorschach, like, well, I guess I'm Ozymandias and you're Rorschach.
And I'm Rorschach.
And I'll say to you, Berto, what if we follow your principle and I don't drop this giant alien in New York and we don't realize the piece on the other side that I think is extremely likely. Yes, Rorschach, you're right. I can't account for all chaos of the system. It's possible things will be the same or worse, but I'm fairly certain, and it stands to reason, you can agree, Rorschach, that this will probably work. Maybe not in the permanent, but we could cross that bridge when we get there. And those concerns of yours are fine. We're superheroes. We'll be able to deal with it. We'll problem solve as we go, but we have to stop the mutual annihilation of the planet, that we will not be able to intervene. Once those people press that button, they're going to kill everyone, not just us, not everyone you care about. It'll just be over. We're two buttons away, one button away from that happening. And we all know these humans are idiots. We can agree on that. You know, we have to save them from themselves. And so let me ask you, Rorschach, if we follow your principle, which I value, and the world goes down in flames, was it worth it?
Right. And I would say, okay, so let me get this straight. You have collected the world's preeminent scientists in almost every field. And before you killed them so that they wouldn't talk, you basically created a science that is probably 100 years ahead of where we are right now, with the ability to manifest city-sized things anywhere on the planet and psychically influence people, that we have exhausted the possibilities of what we can do with this tech.
Yes.
And that we have a Mr. Dr. Manhattan here who can be in every time at the same time and is clearly able to disable a nuke and therefore could disable all nukes if they wanted to, but doesn't want to because doesn't want to interfere. But you're so smart that you don't want to even try to influence them to do so. Instead, you want to influence them to be in agreement with your dumbass plan. No. You think you're smart, you're a dumbass, and if you don't want to help humanity, fine, I'm going to try to help humanity.
What if, for the sake of argument, Rorschach, just entertain me, let's just say that I'm right. The probability is so high that this is the one answer, and I've explored the other answers, and yes, sacrifices had to have been made, but this is the answer. What if, just for sake of argument, that all the other options have been explored, and by far, this is the best option to save the most people, not only today, but for generations to come. What if that's true, but there's, say, like a 5%, 10% chance that this is a mistake overall, when we think about, if we're just privileging like human lives and the quality of life for those humans. You know, we don't want to just think about lives living, but the quality of life. And my argument is that it'll be better off. Let's say there's a 10% chance that I'm wrong, which I could accept for my purposes, but let's say there's 10% chance I'm wrong, and this will be the same or worse down the line. Are you saying that given your principles of order and not compromising on morality, right, that what I'm committing is too much of a sacrifice for that 90% success possibility?
Right. Yes, because you're killing innocent people. And just like when you say, well, look, we're going to send these soldiers to potentially their death, right? That is a calculation. And if you're doing that because there's other soldiers that are trying to invade, okay. But what you're doing is you're killing millions of people because of your theory. Like in your mind, there's a train heading down the tracks and there's a switch, but it's in your mind. Now you can say, no, I'm sure that we're going to annihilate each other with nukes.
I'm 90% sure.
Yeah, that's great. And when that happens, the terrorists did that. And that sucks. It sucks. But why are you keeping humans alive in the first place? Why does human life matter so much to you? It clearly doesn't, since you're willing to sacrifice 10 million of them. Why do more human lives matter to you? What is the end goal?
Why do you care?
I care because we have a simple decision to make in this universe. We're either going to strive for good and, order, I suppose, or not. That's it. That's the only decision. So we can go down fighting.
Eisenhower was wrong for sending troops upon the shores of Normandy and D-Day. He knew thousands of Americans would die.
So in this case, there is an army actually invading and killing. They're doing it.
There are two massive military complexes with guns pointed at each other right now. And they're not going to kill each other. They'll kill us all.
Right.
They'll kill children in South America.
But the analogy would have been, hey,
they'll kill children in East Asia. They'll kill grandparents in Africa. They're going to kill everyone, whether they know about this or not.
The analogy would be, do you see how, let's say, Japan is invading China and doing all these things? What if we round up every Japanese person in this country and show them what happens?
But that's illogical.
No, it's not, because you could think, well,
that's not going to stop the Japanese.
Well,
from
it might, because they might see that we're willing to do anything.
Yeah, it's just incensed. It'll just incense them.
Or you could gather up every German you can find in this country and show Hitler that they're not going to win because we're willing. Because we have,
we have
more Germans living here than live there.
Yeah, it wouldn't benefit the side of the United States because it would lose the credibility of the United States. And thus,
we would sacrifice the higher ground, like Obi-Wan would say.
But no one will know if you don't write it down and share it with everyone.
We would know. The person that did it would know. And
I would know.
And again, the universe, if there is to be a purpose that we make of it, it's, did we go down on the good side or the bad side? And if we went down on the good side, it's fine. There's no harm in that.
So that's the only argument that is viable to me. If you define the good side as they had this version of integrity that you're proposing, which isn't foreign to me,
right?
That it's better to die, like Andor says, fighting for freedom than to die in captivity.
In their system.
Yeah. So that is a meaning that you attribute that is decided upon, and you can decide upon that meaning. I'd rather save those children in South America and those grandparents, those innocent grandparents in Africa, and those innocent people all over the planet. I'd rather save them. And it's a bit of poetic justice to some extent to at least kill Americans, because we're part of the problem.
No, you can still do that. You could still try to, well, then why didn't you unleash it in Russia? No, like, look, you can still try your best to save those grandchildren and those grandparents, but at least you didn't start the massacres, right? Because, like, essentially what's going to really happen is the technology will be seen, and then what's going to happen is that now we're going to enhance our killing capability, and things will just get even more chaotic, and we'll still have an even worse massacre later. And it will be just now we will be like morally self-justified by things like that.
Well, I could see how you would think that, Rorschach, because you're not as smart as I am. You're just going to have to take my word for it. And scene. There is an obvious analogy to dropping the bomb in Japan, by the way.
Of course.
Which we could go over, but why?
But keep in mind that Japan was involved in a war actively and was killing tons of people. Now you could say, but yeah, but not all the people in Nanking, or not, sorry, in not all the people in Nagasaki and
Hiroshima
were actively soldiers. That were, fair points, absolutely.
Yeah, but the analogy is that if we had already eliminated their navy and their air force, we were just worried about their armed forces on the main island and also the citizens that right. would take up arms. And with the experience with Iwo Jima and other areas, it was clear that the Japanese people had been brainwashed into believing that they were dead either way. And so they might as well go down killing themselves by defending their homeland than to get captured and tortured by the Americans, because that was the belief.
And yet you fast forward to now, and it is hard, still very hard, for the U.S. to tell other countries not to use nukes, because the other countries go, are you kidding me? Use nukes. Everything you're saying points to the nuances of that situation, and it is an impossible choice to imagine that one would have to make. And yet, there were so many more ways in which you could see that as a justifiable decision than, in my mind, the scenario in The Watchmen.
It all just depends on how much confidence we have in Ozymandias and his actual intelligence and his application of that intelligence. If we believe his error bar is thus at around 99%, then that's different than 50%, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's just, to me, I always come back to, like, what are we even saving the world from in that case, right? Like, it's one of those, imagine if, because you could draw this to its penultimate conclusion. Let's say that we said, look, it's the all those movies where the way to keep the world in peace, let's say that we had some magic where as long as every day we torture one little baby and we just torture them till they die, but then when they die, we grab another baby and we torture. As long as we keep that going, we have this magic that causes the world to live in peace. I would say, well, too bad. We're not going to do that. Oh, but then the world would, I know. That's the choice we make in this universe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
Right.
Now, to be clear,
you were role-playing Ozymandias.
And there's no such thing as an Ozymandias.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe there wasn't to begin with, because yeah. we don't know if he was... Now, Dr. Manhattan did sign off on it in the end, but, you know, Dr. Manhattan...
But the fact that he missed a detail was enough for us to know that, okay, what other details did he miss?
Yeah. So I want to make it clear to you and everyone listening yeah. that I don't condone the mass murder of humans for one person's fascinations about what that would result in.
Even it's important that you say that, because you and I are both very good role players. And I've run into this problem where sometimes I'll be playing a role and people forget that I'm playing that role.
Yeah.
Like I had this problem in high school where we had this debate, and you were supposed to switch sides. You were allowed to switch sides if you wanted to. And just for fun, I did. And then people were very confused that I was arguing vehemently against the side that I was just on. And how could you do that? And I'm like, I just switched sides, right? But like, I like acting and I can act. So just because one can play a role doesn't mean that's what you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm probably way more like Rorschach in my real life.
Right.
The question was, what alignment is yeah, Ozymandias?
Absolutely.
And I was trying to explore.
I think you were right, ultimately, to say, at the very least, there is I don't think he's lawful, because he doesn't. He doesn't follow laws. I don't think he's... Well, it's arguable. You could say he's chaotic, but...
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. But
there's
but,
a strong argument right. for chaos.
But in his mind, at the very least, he's absolutely trying to do good.
Yeah.
The reason I ended up with neutral was because I'm like... The way he was talking about it towards the end was like, this is just what must be done, right? Yeah. It wasn't like, but don't you get it, Rorschach? Right. We could, like, but you know, it's maybe more of a personality difference.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So in the end, that's true. So the last thing is that, would you say he is a psychopath?
No. Because no. there's no general behavioral
right.
trend of lack of care about other human beings. Right.
He's more
you could
of the,
say he lacks empathy for those people in New York City.
He's more of that suicide bomber kind of model, right?
Right.
Yeah, he's got a belief system.
He's in an ideology yeah. where he believes, he feels bad potentially right. for the people that are that have to go, but it's for the greater good.
Right.
Well, and if, because if you were psychopathic, there would be a pattern of, you know, running into that difference about right. his personality that lacks empathy. There would just be this repeated part of his behavior that people would just be like, Jesus Christ, that was cruel what that guy just did to people.
Right. If I remember right, there was something about how he, and maybe this was part of his grandiose personality thing, but he actually felt more than you would ever possibly know because he ran all the calculations and he just knew that this was the only way. I can't quite remember, but there's some, I think there was, might've been something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the way you portray it, it's on the line where yeah. you're right that if he had said, no, I cry every night
right.
thinking about the people that are dying anyway and the people who could die, I'm doing this out of, I'm trying to save people. You know, my parents died
yeah.
tragically, and I've been trying to save, I can't save them, but I can save a bunch of other
else.
People.
Yeah. yeah, exactly.
So,
and it's okay, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm going to cry myself to sleep with shame and guilt for the rest of my life because of those 10 right. million people. In
that
did city.
Definitely not happen.
Yeah. yeah. So maybe he is psychopathic.
Maybe.
I don't know.
All right. We did it. We diagnosed the evil characters from yeah. all comic books.
Yeah, that was fun. And that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. And don't worry, people. I'm not a super genius by any means. And even if I was, I don't have any ability to manifest a giant squid psychic creature that will kill a bunch of people. And everyone out there, please take care of yourself because
you deserve it.